It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 In Project.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Criterion Project. I am Conrado Falco, as usual, and I am joined, also as usual, by the great film critic Rachel Wagner. Rachel, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. My voice is a little shot. I had a bit of a cold earlier this week, but other than that, I'm ready to talk about movies.
Yeah, well, this is a good one for to put on your fighting face, your fighting voice for this one.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to be talking about the movie Raging Bull, directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Robert De Niro, one of the, you know, big boxing movies of all time. So we'll get to that in a moment. As usual, we will start talking about things we've been watching recently. Rachel, do you have anything that you would like to talk about?
I don't have much, to be honest. I have been pretty busy reviewing theater the last 2 weeks, but I'm very excited. I'm going tomorrow to see Sleeping Beauty on the big screen, which is something I've always kind of dreamed of seeing on the big screen and never gotten the opportunity. So that's going to be really cool at this Revival mm-hmm. Cinema that I'm kind of obsessed with. The Maven Cinemas is their name, and just the lineups that they have are unbelievable. And I try to go every week because I just really want to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really, really excited about that.
That sounds great. I got to say, Rachel, I had seen Sleeping Beauty many times in my life, obviously, because I was a kid and mm-hmm. grew up with Disney movies. And I always liked it. But when I saw it on the big screen a couple of years ago, it really, really opened up. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for you. Have you ever seen it on the big screen before? No, you said mm-mm. no, right?
Never have.
Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. And we got to see, I think it was definitely a film print. I don't know if it was 70 millimeters. It might have been. I think so. And it looked incredible. It was such a great theater experience. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously such a beautiful movie visually. It's going to be really something. If anybody listening has the opportunity to see that in the big screen, I highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, because it's going to be for a couple weeks at Maven. So if anybody's in Utah, I mean, you should check out their listings anyway, because practically every day. I mean, I could live there if they had like a pass. I would be there every day. I mean, really amazing stuff. But yeah, that's the big thing I did see at Maven. I saw the original Kung Fu Panda, and that was really fun. I really that's enjoyed fun. It. Yeah, it's really good. Good animation, good characters. And I enjoyed this latest one. It's not like a masterpiece or anything, but I thought it was cute. I had fun with it, and a pretty good villain. I thought she was pretty chilling, and Viola Davis, good vocal, and nice little winks ways kind of bringing back the other three. So I liked it. And so, yeah, that's about it. I just have been really, we did a ranking at Hallmark's podcast on all the different versions of Sense Sensibility, because there's a new one on Hallmark Channel, and it was period accurate. They hardly ever do period pieces in Hallmark Channel, but it was decent. It was pretty good. And so that was fun to rank all the Sense Sensibilities. So there was that too.
So. All right. I have seen a couple of big movies, a couple of movies on the big screen lately. I guess that I could rattle off. The first one is a movie called Hundreds of Beavers. I don't know if you've heard of this movie, Rachel.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's been around the festival circuit for a while, and it played in New York a couple weeks ago at this point, I think. And it is a comedy by this guy's up in, I think it's Wisconsin. Now I can remember exactly, but it's a silent movie, basically. Obviously, it has a soundtrack and it has sound effects, but it is basically about this kind of like fur trapper in the, you know, 1800s, in the middle of the cold, you know, Wisconsin, Minnesota area, trying to find trying to just find animals to keep up and survive, trap them and get their fur, and then, like, kind of keep going. It feels a little bit like Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush, in the sense of, like, he's up there, he's falls in love with the girl, he wants to marry her, so he has to, like, catch all these animals to impress her dad or whatever. And then it also feels very much like Looney Tunes. It's very, very influenced by Looney Tunes. All the animals are played by people in animal costumes, and the gags and the comedy. It's a very, 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 very silly movie, but it's also, I think, very funny. Maybe the sort of, like, middle section is a little repetitive, as he's, we just have a bunch of gags about him trying to catch different animals, and the things that he's doing feels very kind of Coyote and Roadrunner in that section, but in the snow. But I think that in general, I had such a fun time, and there are a couple of, like, just like very silly, but very funny, my kind of humor. So I definitely recommend for anyone who thinks that might be up their alley.
Yeah, I vaguely heard of it. Maybe it was from you that I'm posting about it or something. But yeah. So cool.
Then I watched, I also went to see the movie, well, I don't know if I want to talk about this, actually, because it was a bit of a disappointment, but I know it's a movie that a lot of people love, and I think that you liked as well. We talked about it when we did our New York Film Festival wrap-up, which is the movie Perfect Days, the Japanese movie that's nominated for international feature, about this kind of, like, toilet cleaner in Japan. We follow him through his daily routine of, like, day after day. I went in with, excited, with high hopes. It sounded like a movie that I would like, and I was kind of disappointed. I don't remember what your thoughts were on it, Rachel.
Well, New York Film Festival was, like, the festival for slow cinema. Everything was really, and that was pretty emblematic of that festival. But I liked it. I thought that he was very good, and overall I thought that it, was for that kind of movie. I thought it was pretty good. I wasn't, like, obsessed with it or anything, but I thought it was a pretty good character piece.
Yeah.
About this person.
I didn't mind it being slow, but I felt like it was kind of laying it on a little thick with its whole thing about, like, daily life. It's, like, beautiful when you really look at it, but there's, like, it really, a movie that people have compared to it a lot is the movie Patterson. I don't know if you've seen that one, Rachel, with Adam Driver. That movie I really love, and it's very similar. In that case, he plays a bus driver instead of a toilet cleaner. But that movie, I think it's very, very funny. And this movie, I feel like, I kind of, like, was hanging out with this guy, but I didn't get a lot in return. Like, he was just, I don't know, it felt a little too precious to me, I guess. But I know that a lot of people love it, so
yeah, I liked the stuff with him and his niece. I thought that that was
interesting,
good.
Because all of a sudden there was another character there.
Yeah. but yeah, I can see how it would not be for everybody. I get that.
It's definitely up the Criterion style, though.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we should get into the movie that we're actually here to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite different than Perfect Days.
Yeah, this is quite different from all the movies we've brought up so far.
Yes, maybe Kung Fu Panda.
Kung Fu Panda is the closest. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're talking about Raging Bull. This is from 1980, directed by Martin Scorsese. And it's the story based on the real life of boxer Jake LaMotta, who was a boxer around the 1940s, if I remember correctly, and 50s from, and he's played by Robert De Niro. And basically, it's hard to say what the plot of the movie is. It's really just following him as he goes from one fight to another, and he kind of, like, wins the title and then loses the title. And then, we flash forward to his life after he has retired from boxing, but it's just really more of a character study. So I guess in that way, feel similar to Perfect Days in terms of, like, really focusing on one character and their psychology.
I guess so.
I mean, it's in black and white. It has very kind of visceral, especially for the time, fight sequences. And it won a couple Oscars, one for editing for Thelma Schoonmaker and another for Best Actor, Robert De Niro, both of whom are also nominated this year for Killers of the Flower Moon. So, you know, they've been around for a while. Rachel, what
With
do you think?
Scorsese.
There's always Martin Scorsese. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this isn't really my thing. So it's not like something that I like loved, but I admired it. I thought it was well done, well put together, well acted. I'll talk about some of the things I kind of wondered about, but overall, I mean, I think it's worth seeing.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not in the camp of, because this is one of those movies that it's been, you know, like when Roger Ebert did his Sight and Sound ballad, he like put it up there. You know, it was one of those movies that was like one of the best movies of all time, one of Scorsese's masterpieces, and that kind of thing.
No, I mean, but it's hard because it's just not really the kind of movie that I love. You know, like so if you're asking me, is it like a finely crafted film? Yes, but I don't know. I just like movies tend to be that are about more likable characters that aren't that aren't skeevy and gross and abusive, and I like ones with more like of a narrative that I'm more invested in, and you know, that's just
very unlikable character. This
movie. Very unlikable, and so that's just my preference. So yeah,
I think
well done.
Yeah, I've had a kind of back and forth in my relationship with Martin Scorsese. I probably have talked about this at some point in this podcast, but this is a movie that has taken me a long time to warm up to and really fully understand. I think the last, and that's why I brought it up to do it as an episode. It's because I was catching up with some Scorsese movies earlier this year. And this time watching this movie, this is probably my third or fourth time watching it. And I liked it already. But this time, the first time I watched it, I didn't really get it. Then eventually I grew to like it. And this time it really clicked for me and like what it was actually doing. And I understood it as many of Scorsese's movies, but I do think this is one of the best ones at doing this, is a portrayal of the kind of a very common, I think, trap of, I don't know if I should say like life, of a couple of things, of like life, of, you know, of manliness, of, you know, kind of like living in a kind of like supposedly meritocracy capital system, also of being a man, also of like gender roles, also and religion as well, and a lot of pressures that kind of like, not everybody ends up taking them out the way that, you know, Jake LaMotta does in this movie by like going to the ring and getting pummeled. But I do think that there are, I've seen it in so many people that I've encountered in my life, this kind of like self-destructing element that doesn't even realize that it's self-destructive in some ways. You know, this guy, I think he, you know, he doesn't really have something that gives him happiness. The only thing that he does is go and fight because he's good at it, and then he wins, but he also gets pummeled by it, you know, and all the things that he wants to do to satisfy his urges, you know, be it fighting by, you know, beating other people or getting together with women, never gives him satisfaction. He is never really, you know, happy. He's like only content when he's suffering, I don't think he would ever put it that way, but I think that's what it is. He just doesn't have another way of going.
Yeah, it definitely has Scorsese's trademark cynicism. He's a very cynical director. I mean, and there's not a lot of hope in most of his films, and certainly this is the case. I mean, I think something like Goodfellas is a little bit more palatable to me because it's a little bit funnier. It's just like has more of a sense of humor about it, where this is not funny, like really at all.
Yeah.
It's not.
That's interesting. I get what you're saying, because the tone is very, very heavy in this movie. I kind of find the scenes between De Niro and Joe Pesci, who plays his brother, very funny in this movie for the most part. I mean, they are not meant to be that funny, but I just find their rapport and the kinds of things they talk to each other and how they talk to each other to be kind of funny, just in the way that they're these two meatheads who, like, are just going back and forth and just, like, you know. So I guess that will largely depend on your tolerance for that kind of person. I think in real life I wouldn't have a good time hanging around these guys, but in this movie, you know, there's two actors that I like, kind of like, you know, putting up the show and, like, going back and forth and kind of like busting each other's balls or whatever. It's kind of funny to me, and that kind of carries me through the movie.
Fair enough, I can see that. I didn't think of that, but yeah, he likes kind of exploring humanity's dark side, darker nature, and like how far we can be, sort of our morality can be pushed. And and, you know, and he tends to be pretty cynical about how far our morality can be pushed in his movies. I haven't seen all of his movies, but you know, I think he would agree with that.
What are you thinking of in this movie in terms of morality? Is it just like the depiction of how horrible this guy is to the people in his life?
Yeah, and he's willing to basically start up he has no problem with underage girls. Basically being like a pimp. He doesn't even think twice about it. He's horrible to his wife. He beats up that man he's completely he doesn't stop to think about his choices. He just goes. And he attacks Salvi, that's the name, just because he thinks he's having an affair with Vicky. He's just not a very good person.
No, he's not at all. He's incredibly insecure as well. And I think that's why it drives him. You know, it's the classic thing of, like, a guy who feels incredibly insecure. I mean, he comes from a working class background. He is not very smart. The only thing that he's good at is boxing, and he feels insecure about it. You know, he feels insecure that everyone's going to steal his girl, that, you know, he's going to lose in the ring, that he's not the best fighter. And he lashes out, you know, because he cannot be vulnerable with anybody, because that's not manly, you know. Instead, he goes up to the ring and either pummels someone else or gets pummeled himself. And it's interesting also, I think, in terms of cynicism and what you were saying about what's lacking in his life also. I think Scorsese, who grew up Catholic, and Jake LaMotta, you know, being an Italian-American, was also Catholic, technically, right? But he's not really. We don't really see him have a relationship with God. We see pictures of Jesus and Mary on his walls, but we never see him in church. And there's that scene in the ring where she practically gets crucified, you know, like, he's like in the crucifixion pose and against the ropes, and he's being, you know, beaten by, I think it's Sugar Ray Leonard at that point. I can't remember who's, like, beating him up, but
yeah,
or Robin, Sugar Ray Robinson, sir. And he just goes like, keep going, you know, you didn't knock me down, you know, I didn't fall, is what he says. But then he walks out and there's nothing there. It's empty, just the ropes and blood dripping from them. And I think that image to me spoke a lot about, like, what is empty in this guy's life. You know, he can act the kind of like Christian sacrifice and the passion, but he doesn't get why that is important. It's totally misses him.
It's true. He even fights with his own brother. It's very true. And I don't know if we're supposed to feel like sorry for him when he's selling the jewels of his belt at the end, but, like, I didn't feel sorry for him.
It's kind of pathetic, you know, like, it's just, and he's selling them to get out of this thing with this underage girl and whatever. I think it's just a picture of a man who's completely lost, you know.
And it is kind of interesting to think about in comparison to Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Killers of the Flower Moon, who's also just a repugnant, you know, character. He's more DiCaprio's character in that movie is more easily swayed and influenced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's kind of a more of a squirrely kind of character than than Jake is in this.
Definitely. He's more of a weasel. He's like, he's not a leader, you know, like nobody's following him. He's following the others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes him unlikable in a, I mean, he's also lost, you know, but in a different way. You think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I wanted to talk about is watching the movie, I was feeling like, why is this movie in black and white? Mm. I mean, it looks pretty. I get it on that level, but I kind of felt like, would this movie be better in color? Because in color, you would see, it would be a lot grittier. It would be, you'd get the blood, you would get the, you know, the sweat, the things. And so I kind of asked on Twitter, and then I was, you know, and people pointed me to some different articles, but it was interesting to learn. I guess Martin Scorsese, when he made this movie, it was kind of a last Hail Mary, mm-hmm. because New York, New York had been a huge flop. Yeah. And so he was feeling very discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided, well, I'm just going to go for it and make the movie that I want to make, because De Niro kind of pushed him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of interesting. And that he decided to do it in black and white. It says here that because of the red gloves, which was not historically accurate since the boxers only wore maroon or black gloves during the 1940s timeline, the Sultan became one of the initial reasons Scorsese opted for black and white filming. Scorsese also realized that film stock color would fade anyway, which could diminish the impact of several scenes. And then he also says here that he kind of wanted everything to look the same. So this is, although he did not particularly enjoy watching the sport, the blood-soaked sponges used on the boxers and the blood on the boxing ring's rope caught his attention. Seeing it as an opportunity to make Raging Bull more artistic, he understood that black and white filming would be perfect, as it would make blood, sweat, and other fluids indistinguishable from one another and leave audiences curious and captivated at the same time. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a good take. I think that I agree with that a lot, actually. I do think that, to me, the black and white makes the movie, actually makes it gritty. Or, like, you know, it could be gritty with obviously, if you've seen the blood red in color, right? But I do think that there is something to the black and white, like this person's saying. It's also very, I think, it's a very stark black and white, you know? It feels more black and white than it does gray, especially in the boxing sequences. Obviously, it is gray, right? It's not just black and white. It's not, you know.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, though.
But the contrast that this guy from the article is talking about, like the you know, the blood looks black on the white canvas. And then also it highlighted to me how many times, you know, LaMotta is fighting also black fighters, which I think it's also interesting in terms of the historical context and the history of, you know, how boxing has been something that, you know, marginalized and poor communities turned to, especially back then, to like lift out of poverty, you know, and get some kind of like winning recognition. So that, and also there's a racial element to it as well. And obviously these characters are mostly racist, you know, since they're these like white men from the 40s with, like, you know, with pretty violent and you know, kind of like blinkered ideas about their place in the world. So that was interesting too.
Well, and he probably also wanted to distinguish the movie from Rocky, since that had just come out a couple of years before.
That's true. This is only about 4 years or so after Rocky. Mm-hmm. And
which one best picture was a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. And this feels like an anti-Rocky in a lot of ways. Yeah. You know, that movie's all about, they're both about Italian-Americans. They're both about, like, and Rocky is this underdog story, you know, like, and he also fights a black fighter, and he, you know, lasts the whole time, and he's triumphant. And this is just like, kind of like a descent into like a personal hell. Like, this guy is just like, I mean, it's one bad thing after another, and it kind of his own making as well.
They really could be more different, which makes sense. I mean, why you want your your movie to stand out. You don't want it to just be a copycat.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think Scorsese was interested in that kind of like, I mean, like you said, he's a cynical filmmaker, but also I don't think he's interested in the like uplifting underdog narrative, right? I think he wasn't even interested in boxing. It was De Niro, like you were saying before, that convinced him to do it. And I think he finds it in that kind of like self destruction element is what speaks to him. At the time, I think Scorsese was also kind of at the height of his drug abuse problems. And, you know, so I think that also might have spoken to him in terms of like rock bottom and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, should we do our questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, why do we think that this is on the Criterion Channel Criterion release?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that's obvious, right? It's one of the most praised movies of all time. Scorsese is one of the most famous directors of all time and the most celebrated. So, right. Of course, it's like up Criterion's alley, no questions asked. I guess an interesting question, it would be like, where do we think this fits maybe in Scorsese's own canon, you know, of the movies that he has made.
Yeah. Where would you rank it? I haven't seen a bunch of his stuff.
Yeah. I haven't seen most of them because I've purposely tried to catch up with them earlier this year. I would rank it pretty high. I think it's like it would be like in my top five or something. My favorite is The Age of Innocence, which we've done an episode on this podcast about, and that I think is just like one of the best movies ever. And Raging Bull, though, is also not that far behind. I think that it really captures the kinds of things that Scorsese is interested in. And I do think it's the best movie that he's made, which he's made a few, where he makes a movie about a famous man who is still alive at the time that he makes them. You know, he made that movie about The Wolf of Wall Street, which is about Jordan Belfort. And he's still around, and then he made a movie about the Dalai Lama, Kundun. So that's kind of like three movies.
I didn't know that. What's his movie on? What's his movie on Dalai Lama?
It's called Kundun. It came out in '97. It was produced by Disney, but then it was kind of like buried because there was this whole thing of like Tibet and China. Disney didn't want to, like, you know, the studio didn't want to piss off China, so they kind of like the movie got kind of buried and. It's an interesting movie. It's not, I wouldn't say it's one of his best, but it's definitely, you know, it's among his spiritual movies and it's got some pretty cool stuff in it. But I think in that movie, he's obviously very reverential to the Dalai Lama, and The Wolf of Wall Street, and in this, he's not reverential to the living people at all, you know?
Right. So
it's kind of interesting because Jordan Belfort has a cameo in Wolf of Wall Street, and Jake LaMotta also has a cameo in Raging Bull. He was still around. So I think that must be kind of crazy to see this movie made about you. I wonder if he was completely over his head or like he got it that he was portrayed as this horrible man in this movie. I don't know, but that's kind of one of those complicating things.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I like Age of Innocence. I do like Hugo. I hate Silence. I like Killers of the Flower Moon. I guess Goodfellas is probably my favorite of his movies. I just think it's the most overall entertaining.
It's a pretty entertaining movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the, like, I mean, if I had to pick if I'm team Goodfellas or team Godfather, I'm team Goodfellas.
Oh, really?
Yes. Just because the pacing, I think it's more entertaining. And I mean, they're both well done for what they are, but just personal preference.
Yeah, I have my list, my letterbox here, so I can give you my top five.
Okay, good.
Number one is The Age of Innocence. Number two, The King of Comedy, which I love.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Number three is actually Killers of the Flower Moon. That movie was really powerful to me. Mm-hmm. And I would put Raging Bull at number four. And then number five, I would put either his concert documentary, The Last Waltz, or the movie Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Have you seen that one, Rachel?
I haven't, no.
That, I think, would be really up your alley. That's a movie that I think you might like. Ellen Burstyn won an Oscar for that movie, and it's about this mom and her kid kind of moving out of a kind of like abusive marriage to find a new life, I think in Arizona or New Mexico or something like that in the desert. Chris Christopherson's in it as well. It's a really good movie. I recommend it as well.
Oh, cool. I have to tell my friend Terry, I'm sure she's seen every movie, so I'm sure she's seen it, but she loves Chris Christopherson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah.
So our second question?
Yeah.
Where do we think this ranks in the pretentiousness scale?
I think pretty high. I mean, not it's not like Godard high, but I would say in 7 or an 8. I think because he's so unlikable, and because the black and white is just like has like a little pretension to it, and I don't know. I just think it's like a pretty art house movie for this kind of movie.
Yeah, that's interesting because you usually think of pretentious and scale in terms of kind of accessibility, right? And how hard it is to follow and stuff. But this is interesting because I guess you're saying that in terms of having a character that is so hard to like and to root for, that is its own kind of like impediment to accessing the movie.
I'd say so. Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of like artsy stuff to the movie. You know, there's a lot of there's the opera music, you know, so it's kind of like and the religious allegory or like imagery rather, and there's also the way the fights are portrayed. They're like, it was pretty innovative for the time. It had been done a couple of times before, but to be inside of the ring and to cut the way that they cut in this movie and the fighting was kind of pretty it was not the way that things were done usually, you know, like to be so close up to the violence. So that was kind of like its own thing. I would put it a little lower than you, but I think at least a 5 or something, you know, like kind of in the middle of a movie that I do think it's you can follow. So, you know, but there is a lot of definitely a movie that wants to say a lot of things and it's, you know, up for interpretation, you know, it's opening itself up for interpretation. It's not just a portrayal of a person and it's just that, you know, there's something to be said there, which I think is kind of pretentious in a good way though, for me.
Yeah. Well, when I was thinking about the remake, I was like, how can you remake it? Because there's just been so many, it would just be like another boxing movie. Like we've seen that a million times.
Yeah.
But I think I came up with a great idea. I really do.
That's here.
Yes. I think this would be very interesting if you gender swapped it and had Jake LaMotta's character be basically like a toxic woman. And what got me kind of thinking is, even though I didn't love the movie Love Lies Bleeding, the new movie from Rose Glass.
Oh yeah, she is just out now, right?
Yeah. She's a very she has a cool visual aesthetic, and I couldn't really go where the movie wanted me to go, but she is an interesting filmmaker, and she did Saint Maud. That was a really good little thriller, and I think because in the movie it's one of the characters is a bodybuilder who starts taking steroids and it starts growing, and there's like a magical realism element to the movie, and this actress who is playing this bodybuilder. Like, I think that it would be very interesting to see her in this kind of role. And I could see it. And Rose Glass, I think, would be
Katie O'Brien, right? Yes. The actress.
Yeah. And I think that would be very interesting to see what Rose Glass and Katie O'Brien, what they would do with this kind of dark character. And what, I don't know, I think that it could be an interesting movie.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Honestly, I think it's so good. I'm not even going to propose another one. I think that because this movie, like I was saying before, to me, it's such a movie about manliness and it's kind of, you know, what you would say toxic masculinity and that kind of thing, right? And all of that stuff. So to see, if you put a woman in the role of the toxic boxer, I don't think it would be the same as this movie. You know, I think it would look different. That the ways in which she would be destructive and toxic would not be exactly the same. So I think that would be very interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it could be fun. Yeah. I mean, not fun, but it would be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you're listening to Hollywood, congratulations. You just got a pretty great idea.
As usual.
Yes.
From us.
So there we go. So I am heading off to the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin this weekend. And it's going to be pretty fun. I'm really excited. Going to see a whole bunch of movies. So we don't have what we're going to be talking about next. But
right, so we're recording a bit in advance, so we didn't know exactly what we're going to do next.
Yeah.
But we will be back as usual in a couple of weeks with another movie or with one of our, you know, special one-off episodes that we like to do every now and then. So, so in the meantime, you can find us where, Rachel?
At Criterion Pod on Twitter. And we'd love to hear what you think of Raging Bull and what are your like five favorite Scorsese's? Love to hear.
That's right. You can find me on Letterboxd. If you search my name, Conrado Falco III. And Rachel, where can people find you?
You can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. And you can find me at the Hallmarkies Podcast. We've been having a lot of fun over there. They just had Jane Austen Month, like I said, this Sense Sensibility they did. And so that's been very fun to cover. So check it out.
Great. Sounds like a great time. I'll see you guys next time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye, everybody.